I want to begin this interview by stating that it is March the 1st, 1983, and we are in the home of Jean T. Campbell on Allen Mead in Louisville, Kentucky, and that the person being interviewed is Jean T. Campbell, and that I am Dorothy M. Harrison. That should get us off to the right start. Jean, I believe that your service was connected with the Second World War, if I'm not mistaken.
That's correct. Yes, it was.
All right. Suppose, in order to do this systematically, tell me what it was that you had done up to the time of your service, your name at that time and where you lived.
All right. My name at the time was Jean Timms, and I lived in a small country town, North Jackson, Ohio. I went to school there, and then I went in training in Youngstown Hospitals Association, where after 3 years I graduated. And from there, I went to Hiram College, where I worked, started working on my degree and also worked in the infirmary.
Hiram College is about 30 miles from Cleveland, and I worked in the clinic with another nurse, and we were at the time we were responsible for the health care of 250 Air Force cadets and also the college students at this small college. There were probably about 200 other students. I stayed there for the full term and then joined the Army Nurse Corps in December of 1944. I had my basic training at Billings General Hospital, which was in Indianapolis, and after that I was assigned to Nichols General, which was in Louisville, Kentucky. I worked with orthopedic and paraplegic patients there, which was really what they specialized in. And then in the spring of 1945, I was one of many that was sent to Indiantown Gap to go to the staging area to go overseas. There were 500 of us there, and when we completed our staging program, 250 of the nurses went to the Pacific and 250 went to ETO, and I was the one of the ones that went to the ETO. We left Indiantown Gap and were sent to Fort Kilmer, where we processed again, and then board ship the Ile-de-France to go overseas. Ile-de-France was had been a luxury liner that had been converted to a troop ship. Of course, the quarters were not that great, since everything had been stripped and we just had bunk beds and several in one cabin. I remember the trip well overseas. I did not get seasick, although I'd never been on board a ship. But the ship zigzagged, and this was because of German subs. We landed at the Firth of Clyde on VE Day, and from there we were boarded trains and went through Glasgow, or from Glasgow into England. And I remember passing the Salisbury Plains and seeing the Stonehenge, which was supposedly put up by the Druids. We were assigned to different hospitals when we got into England, and a group of us went to the 232nd Station Hospital. At the time, there weren't too many patients, as a good many of them were being sent home almost immediately after being wounded. So our patient capacity was low, and having nothing to do, they did find something for us to do. We either had to, we had to have three sports or three things that we had to do that the Army insisted, so that we wouldn't be just sitting around. I know a group of us decided to take up horseback riding, which was rather strange since I don't think any of us had been on a horse. And Mr. Brown had his stable, and I think he was a little disgusted with all of us, but we managed to ride somewhat. He had to give us some slow horses. I think those horses were way beyond their time. Also took up golf, which the sergeant who was trying to teach us said I would make a better caddy than a golfer. And the other was tennis, and I did manage to learn to play tennis decently, I guess because I had done it at home. While we were there, I worked in Central Supply. As I said, the patient load was very low, and two good friends of mine worked in surgery. So we did manage to visit. We were so close to London that we were able to get three-day passes to go into London, and it was a very interesting and a most educational time for me. After a VE day, and of course the war in the Pacific was still going on, and there was, again, we were going to be going to a staging area, which we did go to be ready to go overseas to the Pacific. In the meantime, in August of 45, of course, VJ Day came along, and everybody was very happy because we really weren't looking forward to being on board ship for, which I understand we would have been for quite a while. So instead of going to the Pacific, we were assigned to the continent to relieve the nurses that had been there for quite some time. And we left by ferry and took the ferry to France, and then, it's really a boat train is what they call it, I believe, and crossed the channel and to France, and then boarded trains, and which was a very long ride. I think it took us 2 or 3 days to get to our destination. And we did have a layover in Paris for a whole day, and were able to manage to see as many things as we could. Napoleon's tomb and the Eiffel Tower, and we stayed at a Red Cross, or we were able to go to the Red Cross place, which was, they were always so convenient, and the people were very nice. They were helpful in guiding us in the right directions. When we got back on board and went to Nuremberg, the train, we arrived there, I think, 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, which was not a very good time for anyone, including us, and were sent to the 114th General. This was a large, it had been a German hospital that was taken over by the Americans. It had 1,000 beds. We did have quite a few patients. It wasn't the troops or the patients. The wounded patients had been sent back to the States, but these were the general things that happened in any city or any area. So we were kept quite busy both day and night. We had to, in the hospitals, the shifts for the night, we had to work from 12 to 12, or from 6 p.m. to 6 a.m., which was 12 hours, and that seemed like an awfully long time. Stayed at the 114th General until the spring of 1946, beg your pardon, and then it was when they were the Army, or the, we were getting out on points to, if we wanted to. I chose to leave Nuremberg and go back to the States and get out of the Army in May of that year. Or, well, we left there in April, and I must tell you that while I was in Nuremberg, I was able to attend the Nuremberg trials, which were very interesting. They had interpreters in every language, and it was difficult to get in, but I had a friend that was able to get me a ticket to get into the hall where criminal trials were going on for the German high command. I probably couldn't tell you much of what was going on. I was able to see Goebel, I believe, and some of the others, but it was a strange situation. Nuremberg itself had been destroyed by bombs, so there was really little to see there. We had, because we had had some friends in Ansbach, Germany, we did travel there. This was a group of Air Force men that had, they were really in charge of a German prisoner detail. And this was a really a lovely part of the country that we had seen. It, I guess the area sort of reminded me of back home, the green and all, and in the countryside, of course, the destruction was not as much. Anyway, I left Nuremberg in April of 1946. And we traveled back by train back to Paris, and then to now I can't even remember the area. I believe it was Philip Morris and that area there, where we were in a staging area ready to go home. And we boarded, this was a hospital ship, a Blanche F. Sigmund, and of course it was so much smaller than what the troop ship was when we came over. It was the first time we'd had any fresh fruit or milk or anything, and they had frozen milk on board the ship, and we were just delighted with that. The problem was that it took us so long to get home on board the ship because the weather was pretty foul, and the waves, huge waves, I think we were going backwards instead of forwards at times. We landed in New York on Easter Sunday of 46, and it was such a beautiful day. It was a thrill to see the Statue of Liberty as we came into the harbor. We were taken by bus to Fort Dix, and from there we were processed out of the Army. I remember having to take the train from Trenton home, and it was quite a thrill to be able to get home again. It was good to be back in the States, although the tour of duty in the European theater was really a special time. Got home, and I got married in June of 1946 to a young man that I met overseas, and who was from Louisville, Kentucky. However, I did not know him at the time. I worked as a nurse here. My husband was going to speed school at the University of Louisville, and when we finished, went to Akron, Ohio, where he was with a Goodyear tire company.
and from there to Houston, where he was with the Goodyear rubber plant. He was a chemical engineer. We had one child at that time. Anne was born in 1949, just as my husband finished school. We moved to Houston, and we were in Houston for a year and a half, and then moved back to Louisville. I didn't go back to work until my son, who is the youngest, I have two other children, a daughter, Jean, and a son, Bill. And when my husband was ill, I went back to nursing. And I stayed in nursing until November of 1981. I can truthfully say that my experience in the armed services was most interesting and educational, and I would probably do it again if I were at that time, as I was at that time. This is the end of the interview. This is Jean T. Campbell. Thank you. I'm at the end of this interview, and I wish to conclude that this has been a...
That I needed. It took us 18 days to get across, and it was just, I suspect we simply didn't have time to...
But you know, well, time, I mean, I couldn't tell you exactly how long it took, except it was long enough, it seemed. Anyway, as I say, we got back to the States. It was Easter Sunday. It was the prettiest day in the world. And we saw the Statue of Liberty, and that was the happiest day. It was just wonderful.
Good. Now, the next area that we're supposed to cover is in regard to pay and conditions of living and that sort of thing. So let's start off by saying, or asking you what your pay was, roughly.
It was roughly around $200 a month.
And, of course, you were given your quarters free,
right,
and your food free.
Right.
And were there any other...
Well, now, other than the dress uniform, we were supplied with this, you know, slacks and things like that that we owe.
Your working uniforms.
Working uniforms were supplied overseas.
And what about shoes? The entire...
No.
No?
We bought our own shoes.
You bought your own shoes and your own dress uniform.
Right. And our own dress uniform.
And what about PX privileges?
We did have had excellent PX privileges, especially overseas.
Right. And of course, you bought your things there,
right,
naturally.
Mm-hmm.
Now, another question is, were you given equal opportunities for service and education when you came back? You were, after all, a second lieutenant. Was your rank?
Well, I ended up with a first lieutenant. You know, they give you that when you
are discharged.
Discharged.
Right. So you had a second lieutenant's rank most of the time while you were overseas.
Right.
When you returned, were you given the chance to further your education, had you wished to do so?
Yes, I could have. I didn't take the opportunity because I married soon after I got out of service. In fact, the man that I married was in service overseas.
See.
So that I met there.
Very good. All right. And as a matter of fact, you did feel as though you were treated equally with other officers of the male persuasion.
Right.
Right. What assignments were given to women is the question. I think that in a hospital situation, this is probably different than had you been in the actual Army services.
I believe so. I think that we're placed in our work where we know the most and are...
They were assignments suitable to your experience.
That's right.
And there were women supervisors and women in administrative positions
by and large.
Uh-huh. As well as... Now, you also had, I am sure, a commanding officer who was in charge of the corpsmen and the Army male personnel in the hospital. Is that true?
I never could, whether the colonel was in charge of, whether the nurse, no, I think the chief nurse was just for the nurses.
Just for the nurses.
The nurses, I believe. Possibly for the Corps boys, I'm not sure.
Right. I was aware that there was a dual responsibility when we were on board ship, for instance, that there was a commanding officer of the troops on board ship,
yes,
as well as the captain
who
was responsible for the ship. And
right.
So I was wondering if this was the type of dual responsibility that,
I believe so.
That happened in the hospital. And it says, our next question is, what was the nature of your housing and your medical care?
Our housing was anywhere from a tent to we did live in tents part of the time.
Was this in Germany or was this in England?
No, this
Southern
in England.
England. Southern England. And then when you got to Germany, you had different housing.
Well, our housing was on the third floor of the hospital.
I see.
For nurses, or the nurses' quarter, nursing quarters.
And where were the doctors?
Well, they had their quarters, but I don't know why.
Where they were.
Really. Okay. At that time, I don't know why. I didn't pay attention to it.
That's all right.
But I'm sure they our quarters were on the third floor of the hospital.
All right. And, of course, you got your medical care as part
yes,
of your
that's true.
Your service. And what was your uniform dress? That's a rather odd question, isn't it?
Now, do you think they meant...
Dress uniform? Or no, what do they mean? What do they mean?
Well, our working clothes were slacks and
shirts,
and ties.
And did what was the color? What was the color?
Well, that was more of a khaki color as far as the slacks and all.
I see.
And the shirts were sort of beige, weren't they? Or a tan colored, if you would. You remember that?
All I remember were that some of the nurses were in striped.
All right. Now, we didn't wear the striped uniforms much overseas, that I remember.
I see.
At least not in the station hospitals. I don't remember wearing them in the others either too much. We wore them here in the States.
Uh-huh.
The striped, they were brown and white striped.
Stripes. Seersucker.
Seersucker. And the caps were to match.
Right.
They were not too attractive, really.
They
were a wraparound.
I can remember seeing some of the nurses in the hospitals in Cherbourg.
Yeah.
In those seersucker.
I think it depended on where you wore, as far as that goes. But most of the time, we wore the slacks and shirts.
And were they wool, or were they...
The slacks were wool.
Mm-hmm. And the shirts, mm-hmm, of course, were cotton.
And, of course, our dress uniforms were a little different. The color was a little... I don't know what the green would be called. It was a little darker green. It was not a khaki.
I see.
And
we had
to buy our own dress
uniforms, but they were standardized.
Right.
Right.
Standardized.
And you wore little hats, I believe. With
yes.
Was it a touch of white, or am I thinking
no,
of a different?
We had no white on our hats. It was just the same color as the
uniform.
Uniform.
I see. We've got to watch our tape. We've got plenty of space left. All right, and now we come to one of the more interesting questions, which is, what were your memorable experiences? So we'll pause here while you think about that.
One of the experiences that I remember, which was rather unhappy, was Christmas Eve in 1945. The younger soldiers that were sent overseas, whether it was just through lack of having anything to do or what, this was a racial problem that happened, and the young men would get into fights, the black and the white soldiers, and the night of Christmas Eve of that 45 was when so many had fought each other and injured each other. And it was one of the worst nights as far as surgery and taking care of young men.
Stab wounds, I suppose.
Stab wounds, yes. mostly, and shootings. And it was.
Was it one?
Distressing.
Yes. Was it a single brawl or several?
Well, there were several that night that we remember.
What a way to spend Christmas Eve,
yes,
in other words.
Yes, it really was very unhappy.
And these,
hard to believe that
these were really black and white soldiers newly come from the United States, rather than men who had actually served with each
other. That's right.
These were
new men
during the Second World War.
These were men that came in for the occupation troops.
All right. Now then, I understand, Jean, that you attended the Nuremberg trials.
Yes, I was fortunate in attending the trials. I don't know whether that's an appropriate word for that, but it was an experience in seeing the men that had been in charge of politics and the people in Germany and had caused, well, were the real cause of the war or had brought it on. And the trials themselves, although I didn't understand a lot of it, it was interesting to see the people. It was interesting to hear the different reports.
You had a sign. You were wearing headphones that gave you English translation of what was going on. Were you there for just one day?
It was just for the one day.
And who was? Did you see any of the important or infamous characters?
Yes, I saw. Well. Hess was there, and who was the big general?
Goering.
Goering was there, but I remember those two. I remember. I can't remember.
What
all
was
the others.
What was memorable about them? Was Goering as heavy as, or heavier than, or what?
He was as heavy as he was pictured.
And he was.
I noticed that none of them had, were just, they just sat there without hardly an expression. That's what I noticed.
Just expressionless.
Uh-huh.
How far into the Nuremberg trials was this?
Well, this
I
is according to I had a
you have
a ticket
to it.
I went into it, and according to this, it was the 62nd session of the.
Maybe by this time, both Goering and Rudolf Hess had developed 10 ears.
They probably had. But anyway, it was, to me, it was particularly special
that you were able to see. What, besides the impassivity, if that's the word to use, of the men on trial, what else impressed you about it? Was the conduct of the trial one of seeming proper, lawful, a procedure? Did you get that feeling, or there a sort of hysterical attitude?
No, everything was quite orderly, and there was no. I really can't
suspense.
Say
no suspense. Or
no, it was just
attitude.
It seemed like a very orderly
trial. Did you recognize any of the other people in the room, or were they pointed out to you of any importance? Or were they?
Well, I was there by myself, and I really didn't know anyone.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
It would have helped if I had
someone
with me.
Right. Did they, during the time, did they come to, what were they, what was the point of the discussion on that day, or could you, do you remember after all these years?
No. Dorothy, I'm afraid not.
All right. Well,
I couldn't remember.
Very good. Now, how did you amuse yourself? We'll get away from the war crimes and that nasty brawl. How did you amuse yourself when you were off duty?
Well,
you were just telling me about the little experience in southern England. You might repeat that.
Well, that was when we first went over there. As I said, we landed on VE Day, and actually, most of the troops or the patients had been sent back to the States already. So the Army decided that we should do something in recreational form. And so I took up horseback riding and tennis and golf. The horseback riding was somewhat dangerous for me because I'd never ridden one, and the horse that I did take was took off with me and had difficulty in stopping. The man who owned the stables finally did, and as I told you, the horse's name was Spider, and he deserved the name.
He did.
Yeah. And then...
How did your golf work out?
Well, the golf didn't work out either. The sergeant that was in charge told me, or that was teaching us, told me that I'd make a better caddy than I would a golf player. So I ended up, I did play tennis fairly well.
Yeah. Of all the sports you were expected to take part in. And then I suspect that there were, in Germany, always neighboring army units that were anxious for feminine company.
That's true. We had a group of us would go over to, men were in the Air Force. Actually, they were guarding
Prisoners of war?
Yes, they had some prisoners of war. But there was an air base there, and we were always invited there. They would pick us up, and we'd enjoy it. I don't know, they weren't supposed to be killing deer, but I guess they did occasionally. And we had some fresh venison, which was a treat. And
how were the parties? A little bit raucous?
Somewhat at times. These were pretty nice young men. We were quite fortunate in having a nice group
there. This was at Ansbach?
This was in Ansbach, which was close to Nuremberg.
Good. All right. Now, let's see. We'll continue here. The next question is, can you compare service careers then with the present? Well, since you're no longer in service, you really
can't
do that.
No, I couldn't.
Did you experience conflict between being feminine and being a military professional?
What does that
mean? I have a feeling that, again, they're thinking in terms of a woman, say, a WAC officer in a professional capacity here. I can't imagine that this would occur in a hospital situation.
I don't think we had the problems that they probably had there, mainly because we were
working with other professionals,
and it was just a little different.
Yes, I think you're probably right. Did you use any benefits after you came back, the GI Bill?
No, I didn't.
Did not. All right, another question is, what demanded the greatest adjustment, presumably to your service life? Uniform dress, living with others, regulations, lack of freedom, terminology. Did you have any, did this require a great deal of adjustment?
Well, Dorothy, it didn't require that much because when I was in training, at that time our living was very similar to that. Our hospital was almost run like a military institution. So that we had hours, we had to always sign out, we had to come in, we had certain uniform dresses.
Right.
So it was not that difficult.
And
you
had regulations you had to abide by, and you had to stick with a certain schedule so that the lack of freedom was...
Like everyone in different things, you get frustrated about some things, whether it's some lack of freedom and all. I could tell you about the little episode that when I was in England, I was going with this young man, and we were walking through the parks, London.
In London.
And I had taken my cap off, and the military police came up and handed me a thing for,
failing to be in uniform?
Yes, a court-martial.
Were you actually court-martialed, or was it just a warning?
No, he actually gave me the thing. Well, of course, I was very upset about the thing, just not having my cap, but, you have to understand, you have to be in uniform when you're out like that.
Yes.
But you know how you get when you're with someone that you like, and
you relax a little.
You relax a little bit, but...
Well, what was the outcome?
All right, the young man came back and tore it up. And he didn't apologize, but he said he didn't want you
cause you any trouble.
So I was relieved, and I
thanked him.
And I was surprised, though. I don't know what possessed him to do it, but he did. But
perhaps he just realized that it was a temporary lapse. Did you have the hat in your hand?
I had the hat, but I didn't have it on.
Well, maybe he had began to feel at that point that he was being a little bit sticky.
But that was a surprise of my life when he came up and handed me.
Did you a court martial?
Okay.
All right. Of the regulations which you did have to deal with, which were the most unpopular for you or your nurses, or didn't you really feel that there was anything that was unpopular?
Well, I thought there were some things that I never could understand. Of course, with the military and with the Army, you have to just take it like it is, because that's the way it is. But there was, I know when Gene Trick and I were going to go on a leave, we'd been there long enough and we wanted to go up in Scotland. And we were off, but the chief nurse would not let us leave the base that night to get a train, even though we would have lost almost a whole day, you know, going into London and all, to take the train up to Scotland. And I never could understand regulations like that, you know, that just absolutely, even though you're off,
it was on by the book. You must not leave the base until a certain some time or other. That was rather, who was going by the book.
Yeah, she was going by the book. But, and maybe that's a good reason for all their things. They can't stop. But there are times when you feel like...
That was a little too much.
I felt like it was a little too much. That was the only time I ever ran into something that I... felt like
that. Was a little over-regulated.
Yes, it was a little over-regulated.
All right, now the last question on this interviewer's sheet is, what did you do after your service was concluded? So you may do us a swift upbringing from the end to the present.
Well, I got out of service, and at the time
When were you actually discharged?
May of 1946. I don't even remember exact date. I do have a discharge thing, but but it was in May of 1946, and then I got married in June of 1946.
You wasted no time. No. Well, when did you meet this man?
In December of
45. 45, right.
And he was from Louisville, Kentucky. Okay. So it was sort of strange because I left here from here to go overseas.
And you came back. And his name was?
William Campbell.
William Campbell. And I gathered that you had two daughters at least.
I had two daughters and a son. Anne is the oldest and she's teaching at Fort Knox. Jeannie is, Anne's 33. Jeannie's 27, or no, Jeannie's 30. She's 33 years old. And she part in music. And
she's married.
And she's married, and she's married to Clinton Gross, who's a violinist with the Louisville Orchestra.
And your son?
And my son lives in Richmond, Indiana. He graduated from Earlham College, and he teaches there. Not in Earlham College, but in the town of Richmond.
Richmond. Oh, dear, I don't know why I say Earlham.
He, too, is married.
Do you have grandchildren?
Well, this is, he has two marriage, the two
children
are
by his wife's first marriage. So. Very good. So you have step-grandchildren, which is pretty nice. Well, thank you very much. I think we have covered the questions that are on this sheet, and we'll conclude then with saying goodbye to the tape.